Well, we're getting in place. I want to ask you a question here, a couple things. Have you ever, don't have to raise your hand for this, okay? This is not raise your hand time. You can be, I guess, but this is more of a introspective or can you relate question. Have you ever struggled with prayer? Right? Just struggled with prayer. Like maybe you're thinking, I've prayed and I didn't get the answer, or at least I didn't get the answer I was looking for. Or maybe you're like, well, I know the answer. Right? It might be more complicated than that. I understand how that works. But maybe you'd say, I don't feel like I maybe connected. I wanted to have a spiritual connection with God. I don't know that I felt it. I wondered if, you know, I see people around me who I hear them pray. They sound so good at it. And I was like, I wish I was more like that. Or maybe you come and say, I just don't know that I'm saying the right words, or my prayers are disappearing in the air. And maybe we get afraid sometimes that we're doing it wrong. Am I doing it right? Am I doing this thing of prayer? Am I doing it wrong? And we get nervous about it, and it just can feel daunting. That I think maybe sometimes discourages people from praying or continuing to pray. And so maybe you can relate to some of that, maybe not. But here's what we're going to see today. As we continue our journey through the life of Jesus, we're going to see that the disciples who were closest to Jesus and heard him teach all about prayer and saw him pray, they had the same questions. It's interesting because when we follow the gospel accounts, Jesus would oftentimes be with his disciples, and then he would get away into a mountain or to a garden alone to pray, or he'd take them with him and pray around them, or he'd take a few of them with him to pray someplace special. So they've seen a lot of that. They have been with him as he taught the crowds about prayer. They heard the conversations he gave about how to pray and stuff like that. And yet they still had questions. So don't ever feel bad, by the way, about feeling, man, I should understand this by now, right? Or I should be knocking it out of the park by now. Those closest to Jesus still had questions. In fact, we pick up that context in Luke chapter 11, beginning with verse 1. It says this: once Jesus was in a certain place praying, as he finished, one of his disciples came to him and said, "Lord, teach us to pray, just as John taught his disciples." Now, here's what's interesting. He mentions John the Baptizer. John the Baptizer is now dead. He was executed by Herod Antipas. But John used to teach his followers how to pray, and some of those disciples of John became disciples of Jesus. When John pointed them to Jesus, they left John to follow Jesus. In fact, one of those was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, and perhaps he's the one disciple in this verse who comes to Jesus and says, "Hey, John kind of helped his guys out. Can you teach us to pray?" When it says teach us to pray, what they mean is teach us how to pray. Teach us to pray is okay, pray, right? But teach us how to do. What are we missing here? Is there something that we should understand? Can you help us with this idea? And again, they've been around him. They've heard him teach about it, but they have questions. Now, we're not going to look at the verses that come after this today. I'm setting the stage. We're going to come back down the road a little ways to this passage. But I'm going to tell you what Jesus is about to do before we go backwards, okay? Jesus is about to tell them something to do when he's teaching them how to pray that he already taught the crowds around them that they've seen him teach before. And then he's going to give them something brand new. He's going to give them something brand new, something a little deeper. But he starts with something familiar. Here's why. Because what he's going to say to the disciples about prayer is not going to be that drastically different than what he told everybody else. Wouldn't that be weird? Be like coming up and saying, I'm a health and fitness coach. I'm going to teach you about diet and exercise to my audience. I'm not qualified, but I'm just saying if someone did that, and they taught the audience about diet and exercise, then they got aside with their inner circle team and said, "Don't do any of that, do this instead." You'd be like, "Well, that was pretty lousy." Like, hopefully you're teaching everybody the same stuff. It's not like insider secrets here. So when the disciples ask him to teach us to pray, he begins by telling them things that he has taught everybody, because there's not a different answer for them. But he does decide to dive deeper with them after that. And we're going to see that on a different week a few weeks from now. But for today, we want to go back to what he taught the crowds, because Jesus taught the crowds about prayer, and he's going to teach it to the disciples privately as well. Now, what did he teach the crowds? Well, we can find a lot of it in the Sermon on the Mount. If you were with us back about 10 months ago, we spent several weeks studying the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7. And I told you then, and I've said it before, I don't think the Sermon on the Mount was the one and only time Jesus taught those ideas. He probably taught them wherever he went, because he would go places and teach people that he might never see again. He would see them here and never there. And so probably a lot of the great things he had to say, he would bring with him and teach it to the crowds in every different place, which means the things that we read in the Sermon on the Mount, the disciples probably heard Jesus say that over and over and over again, which is interesting as he talks about prayer, and they still have questions all this time later in Luke 11 when they're saying, "Can you teach us?" So he gives them the same information, some of it, again. So let's go back to what he taught the crowds in the Sermon on the Mount and everywhere he went, most likely, about prayer. And we pick it up in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 5. And the first few verses we actually went through before in March of last year, but we were talking about something else then. We're going to talk about prayer together. So pick it up in Matthew 6, verse 5. Ready? Jesus taught the crowds. He says, when you pray, don't be like the hypocrites, who love to pray publicly on street corners and in the synagogues where everyone can see them. He says they're praying for show. They like to pray when they're outdoors or in the church building or someplace where the people are like, "Wow, that person sure can pray. Shazam, that was amazing prayer." He says they pray to leave an impression on people. The implication is that they don't really have much time for God privately. The implication is their prayers are always about impressing others. They pray, because sometimes you have to pray publicly, right? Got an invocation, there's times to do that. But if we only pray to let others see us pray, in fact, if you read the context of this verse, the way we taught it 10 months ago, he was teaching about secret service with our giving and our fasting and our prayer, that we're not supposed to be doing it for show. He says, people who do it for show, he says, I tell you the truth, that is all the reward they will ever get. I love that clarity there. Because when I pray, I'm hopefully praying for an answer or praying to feel closer to God. That's the reward I want to get. But he says, if people are praying to impress others, fine. They can have that. I'll give that to them. That's all yours. Verse 6, he says, but when you pray, go away by yourself, shut the door behind you, and pray to your Father in private. Then your Father, who sees everything, will reward you. Just get alone with God and let him give you the things you're really coming, that relationship you're trying to build, that thing you're seeking. Verse 7, he gives them another caution. Verse 7, when you pray, don't babble on and on as the Gentiles do. When he says Gentiles here, he's referring to all the other religions they've seen around them. People have always had religions where you have a deity that you believe in or a god you believe in. Perhaps you make your god out of your own skilled hands, out of stone, or carve it out of wood and worship it, which, by the way, how puny of a god would you have to have if you could make your god out of yourself and then worship it? That's kind of weird if you think about it. Or maybe they worship something in the sky or something in the earth, and they would pray to their deities, hoping that if they say the right words, chant the right chant, say the right secret code, they would appease their gods, get the favor they want. And so it was a ritual. It wasn't personal. He says, don't let prayer be like that. You gather around something and you all bow down together. Hum. Hum. We're still going. Hum. Bop, bop, a do, bop. Hum. He says, don't. Don't pray like that. That's not what we're after. Come on. He says, I don't want you to sit there and act like you're rubbing a magic lamp, hoping that a genie appears and you get three wishes because you rubbed the lamp just right, or that you're coming to say abracadabra or the secret phrase and then the secret passage opens up and you get the treasure. He says, God is not this person who you just look at. If you get the right, decode the message just right. Someone writes a real good prayer, I'm going to memorize that. He says, people who do that, they think their prayers are answered merely by repeating their words again and again. How do you get the right prayer? And just kind of commit that to memory and just repeat it over and over, then that's talking to God. That's not what talking to God's supposed to be. Now, this is an important verse, and I'm spending some time here because he's about to teach us the model prayer. Some of you call it the Lord's Prayer. I think it's better called the model prayer. And the problem with it is that the prayer he's about to teach us, guess what Christians have done for the last couple thousand years? Many of them have memorized the model prayer and repeated it over and over again like he just said not to do. So I'm just trying to tell you that's not the point of the model prayer, is to memorize it. I'm not saying it's ever wrong to repeat that prayer. You're in a time of high stress or going through some tough anxiety and you can barely keep track of, you know, you're struggling and all you can muster up is the words that you've memorized, that you're familiar with. God hears that. But that should not be our regular prayer diet. I want you to have a relationship with God that is more authentic than just a memorized prayer someone wrote. You repeat over and over and over and over again, as if somehow that opens the vault. Verse 8, he says, don't be like them, for your Father knows exactly what you need before you ask him. He says, come on, God knows. Mom and dad, he says, fathers, he says, you parents understand. God knows. He just wants to hear from you, man. So just be real. Now that brings us to the summary, and this is a little bit of a review that we gave you back in a few months ago. By the way, go back and check out that sermon if you missed it. I would encourage it, and here's why. I'd encourage you to check out that sermon because we talked about prayer in the context of this and how it relates to our other relationships in our lives, whether it's marriage or family or other things like that. But we talked about this big idea, and we made three points about prayer that day that I want to remind you of before we move on, and that is this. Jesus is teaching, when you pray, number one, have a plan, and then make it personal and keep it private. Have a plan means, he says, when you pray, have a time and a place, because most of us know that if we don't have a time and a place, it won't get done, right? How many of us say to somebody in our lives, we should get together, I'm guilty. We should get together, have a bite to eat, have some coffee, let's do it. And we mean well, but then 6 months later, man, we keep meaning to get together. Why? We didn't make a plan. And the time and a place has got to be a plan. So have a plan, make it personal, because God wants to hear from you, not someone else's words. It's like when you get that card that someone gives you, and on the one side, some person you've never heard of wrote a poem or something, and then on the other side, they wrote a handwritten note. The handwritten note from the person you know is more important than the fancier words that, from someone you don't know, right? Make it personal. Have a plan. Make it personal. Keep it private. So that's a review, but it's important to understand as we get into the next part. Ready? After saying that, Jesus now teaches us what we call the model prayer, or you might call the Lord's Prayer, but I think that's a better name. There's another prayer he'll pray later before he dies. I think it's the better Lord's Prayer, because he actually prays it. This is the model prayer, I think. And when I say model prayer, I mean it's sort of a prayer blueprint, or if I could use this word, it's a prayer template. Now, I can understand the template idea. I do a lot of weddings and funerals, especially funerals, through the years. In fact, I got a couple this week. There's a viewing today and a funeral I'm doing tomorrow, a viewing Tuesday and a funeral I'm doing Wednesday. A lot of that lately, it seems like. It's an opportunity to minister. But in weddings and in funerals, when I do them, I'll meet with the people who are getting to lay their loved one to rest, or they're getting to prepare for their wedding. And I'll say to them, here's what a typical funeral service looks like, or here's what a typical wedding looks like, and here's a template, because they don't have a lot of experience with putting a service together. That's what I do. So I'll say, here's a template, but I'll tell them, this is your funeral for your loved one, or this is your wedding for your family. Don't get stuck in this box. We can add whatever you want to add. We can take out whatever you want. We can rearrange things. It's your thing to dress up. I'm just here to give you something to work with so that you know where to start. That's a template. And Jesus is going to give a template in prayer, because many of us are, like we said earlier, I don't know how to pray. Jesus, let me give you something to work with. So he gives us a template or a model prayer. In Matthew 6, verse 9, he says this. Pray like this. Notice those words. He doesn't say pray this. He says pray like this. Pray like this. Our Father in heaven. I'm going to stop right there. Have you seen the last few verses today that we've been reading? He keeps using that word Father. It's like the fourth time we've seen it today. Your Father who sees you in private, or reward you openly. Your Father knows what you need before you ask him. Pray this, our Father in heaven. Why Father? We cannot shrink God down into such a small category as to say he's nothing more than a parent. He's a father, that's it. That would be too small of a deduction of God in his vastness. But Jesus understands that we can't wrap our minds around the maker of heaven and earth and all things, the creator of all. How do we as mere mortals fully wrap our brains around and explain God is so much bigger than us, and he should be. Otherwise, how small is God? So to try to help us understand the concept of God and how to communicate with God, he says, understand Father because you understand parent. We understand procreation, becoming dads and moms and having dads and moms. Because you understand that construct, this will give you handles by which to approach God because God is much more, but he is both powerful and he is personal. He's powerful and he's personal. So he wants you to be able to come to him in a way that you can understand, and you can understand Father or Mother, right? So our Father. The idea would be we come to God in a way that we is relational. Now you say, well, some of you might say, well, Arlen, that's hard for me to be honest because I didn't have a very good father. And I understand that. Some of you had an absent father. Some of you have a father you maybe wish was more absent because of how he was. Maybe you had an abusive father. Maybe you had a negligent father. Maybe you had an absent mother or abusive mother or negligent mother. And you're like, I don't have a box to relate to God being a good father because I didn't experience that. But here's the thing. Even if we didn't have a good parent in our lives, all of us here in the room, we know what we wish it would have looked like, don't we? We know the ideal. Maybe we had a friend somewhere who had an amazing father or mother, and we're like, I wish that's what I want, that's what how it should be. That's how I want to be a parent someday, right? We know what the ideal looks like, whether we experienced it ourselves or not. Perhaps we said, when I'm a parent someday, I will be a great father or a great mother. And maybe we became parents and we didn't live up to our own billing. We had all these things, but then we're done. We're like, man, I tried, you know? And so, but we know what the ideal looks like. We know the ideal. And Jesus says, look, when you come to God, he's more than this, but think of what a good father would be, whether you had that or not. And let that be a gateway into talking to the God of the universe, that he is a father. Our Father in heaven, may your name be kept holy. That's reverence and respect. That's coming in the air of respect because, yes, he's Father, but we're not coming to God. We're not coming to the maker of the world saying, hey, Pops, pay attention, Pops. I'm talking to the old man upstairs here. No, he's more. He's God of all things, and so I know who he is, but I'm approaching him because I can come to my Father and boldly I approach his throne. May your name be kept holy. The next verse is so powerful. Verse 10, may your kingdom come soon. May your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Now, here's what's happened this week. I have to tell you this. I realized I've had weeks to get ready for the next sermon I was going to preach on the stage because we've had some guests, my friend here the last couple weeks. I should have been ready, but by Friday, I could not get my sermon done without getting you out of here way too late today. And I kept saying, what's the hang-up? And the hang-up is this verse right here. It got so a hold of me. I've read this verse. I've taught this verse. I've been a part of this verse for many years. But this, lately, this has rung my bell in a fresh way. And so I told Thursday night, I said to Anthony, I think I'm going to pull that verse out and give it a whole, it might not be a whole sermon, but it needs to be another time. So we're going to take I'm going to come back to it real soon because it needs more attention than I want to give it today because it gets me all worked up because it's something God's doing in my life right now in my prayer journey. So I want to show it to you, but we're going to move on for today. Part of the model prayer, may your kingdom come soon, may your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That, by the way, notice we've not asked God for a single thing yet. We've not asked him for a single thing yet. We've just been talking to God, our Father, showing respect to his name and telling him about his kingdom, his will. And then we get to asking in verse 11. He says, give us today the food we need. You know how powerful that is? Here's what that verse is not saying. Hey God, would you please give me what I'm going to need for the next 40 years so I don't have to bother you anymore? Just give me the whole next, take care of the rest of my life so I can come today, ask big enough to sign on the dotted line and never come back because, whoo, I'm done. He says, give us today. Because you know why? He wants us to come back tomorrow for what we need that day. Here's the thing about prayer. Here's the thing about life. Can we all agree with this? Some of us planners, we can think, I'm going to plan the next whatever part of my life. You can plan ahead sometimes, and within a week, everything changes. Life can happen. And then all of a sudden your plan gets turned. And so Jesus is saying, don't come to God and say, God, here's what I want you to do for the next 30 days, and I'll talk to you at the end of that month. He says, here's what I need today. I don't know what the future holds. I don't know what tomorrow holds, but I know that today, here's what I need. And food is brought up because it's provision, but it might not just be physical food. It might be, I need strength today for today's challenges. I'm facing this situation at work. I'm facing this crisis in my life. I'm facing this health problem. I'm facing this relational challenge today. God, would you give me today what I need for today? And I can come back tomorrow again for what I need that day. It's a big idea that we overlook so quickly. Give us the food we need today. Let's just keep it closer so we don't worry about the future so much and we focus on what's right in front of us and we are living more present. Verse number 12. And forgive us our sins as we have forgiven those who sin against us. Now, I hate to say this, but here it goes. This is another truth that's way too big for today, but I knew that before this week. This is part of an upcoming sermon. I'm going to have to skip most of this, otherwise I'll steal the sermon. It'll take way too long. This is a big idea we're going to come back to soon. Jesus comes back to it soon too, by the way, so we will join him. But just for today, notice the first part. And forgive us our sins. In other words, we come to God and say, God, would you provide for what I need today? Oh, and by the way, would you forgive me? Now, here's the thing about forgiveness. And Debbie talked about this a little bit, but God is forgiving. That's why Jesus went to the cross. He paid for our sins, right? They're done. He did that. But asking him for forgiveness is not because he's not sure he will, but because he says, come keep the air clear. Anyone who's in a relationship knows what it's like when you got to clear the air, right? It could be between your spouse, and it could be Matt and Carrie over here. It could be Matt and Carrie has something happen between them. I'm not projecting here. They have something happen between the two of them, and they know, Matt knows that he, I'm going to pretend Matt messed up because I just know better than to say Carrie ever did. So Matt messed up, and he goes to Carrie, and he knows that she's going to forgive him for what happened because that's who she is, but he still says, I should at least acknowledge it. I should clear the air. Could be friends. Could be Ben. I've wronged Ben, and I want to clear the air, not because I think he's a forgiving person, but because the right thing to do is to address the elephant in the room so we can move on. That's what friends do. That's what healthy relationships do. And God is forgiving, but Jesus says, when you come to God in prayer, say, would you forgive me for the things? Can we all admit that we usually come in, we're like, I've not batted 1,000, right? I missed some free throws. I missed some layups. Would you forgive me for the things I know are wrong? Here's the interesting thing that I was thinking about. Actually, Anthony and I were talking between services. He doesn't tell us to ask for us forgiveness before we ask for the food we need. He's asked for what you need. Because here's the why. Some of us might think, oh God, if I could just get you to please, I grovel hard enough, like Debbie said earlier, maybe you'll beat me mad, and then I can ask you for what I need. And God says, just come asking for what you need. You just come, period. But yeah, let's clear the air if there's something going on. So the provision that I need today, I ask for forgiveness. And then the next thing, verse 13, it says this, and don't let us yield to temptation. Now, here's the funny part about this one. This is church words. Some of you may have never said those words in prayer, but all of us have prayed this prayer in some way, probably. Here's another way of saying it. Lord, help me not to mess this up. You ever prayed that prayer before? Okay. Lord, help me not to mess this up. Like, Lord, here's the thing. I know me, and I know that I can do what I think's the right thing to do, and what was not I got that wrong. Or Lord, it's not even accidentally. I know I can accidentally mess this up by thinking I'm doing right. I can on purpose mess this up, Lord, because I know me, and if passion strikes, I don't want to give in to lust and ruin part of my life. I don't want to give in to anger and ruin something in my life. I don't want to give in to pride and ruin something. I know that I'm prone to do something in the moment that I will regret later. Lord, help me not to mess things up and to bring harm to myself or harm to the people that I love, the people around me. So God, please don't let me yield to temptation. We've all prayed that prayer in some way, haven't we? Lord, help me not to get this wrong. Help me not to misstep and do this wrong. Help me not to mess it up. It's a good prayer. And then he adds this to it afterwards. He says, but keep us safe. Let me see how it's worded here. Rescue us from the evil one. But rescue us from the evil one. What does that mean? Lord, not only protect me from the harm I would do from within, the harm I would cause to myself and others, but protect me from the harm from without. Protect me from the outside forces, the evil around me, the evil one, the evil ones, anything. Keep me safe. Protect us from the things that would harm me and those around me, whether that's me and what I do or things that happen to us. And so in this prayer, we've asked for a few things. Would you give me, provide for me what I need today? Forgive anything that needs to be forgiven. Guide me and protect me. Those are good prayers. Most of us have probably prayed prayers like that, and those are included in the model prayer. Now, Jesus has more to teach about prayer, and he's going to teach that same model prayer. When is at the beginning of today, we started with the disciples asking him to teach them how to pray. You know the first thing he taught them when he started teaching them privately, their private extra spicy lesson? He taught them the model prayer again. He says, no secret, there's nothing I'm going to hide from everybody else to give to you. As far as the basic things go, this is what it is. But he does go deeper with them after that. We're going to see that later, not for a few weeks probably. But here's the thing. That's the model prayer, and that's a good takeaway. There is one other passage about prayer that Jesus gives in the Sermon on the Mount besides this. It's later in the sermon. Remember, the Sermon on the Mount, he probably preached that same content wherever he went. And so the disciples probably heard it 100 times. And then we jump ahead one chapter later to Matthew chapter 7. We'll come to what else Jesus has to say about prayer today, and we'll finish up with that passage. Matthew 7, beginning with verse 7. Jesus said, keep on asking, and you will receive what you ask for. Keep on seeking, and you will find. Keep on knocking, and the door will be open to you. Some of you, if you're older English translations, they might just say ask and it will be given to you, seeking you will find. They don't say keep on. But if you've ever been around the background I came from where it says that in the translation, they would tell you, in the Greek, that word ask is in the linear, which means to ask and ask and ask and ask and seek and seek and seek and seek. It's the same thing. Keep on asking, keep on seeking, keep on knocking. Now, why does it say that? Is it because Jesus is teaching us that we should come to God like our children might come to us and say, can I have that game, please? Can I have that game, please, 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 can I have that game, please? I don't know. Next day, please, can I have that game, please, 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 please? I don't know. Next day, please have that game, please, please, please. Okay, fine. Is that what Jesus is teaching here? He could be. Did you know that that is actually a teaching about prayer? That Jesus teaches, in fact, he teaches the disciples later, exactly that. That we should be persistent in our prayers with God, just like that. So if that's what this is teaching, that would totally fit a good prayer teaching. Don't give up until God says yes or clearly says no, and then you say, okay. But until then, persist. That's a great truth. But I wonder if that's the truth here. Because in the rest of this context, though he does teach that elsewhere, there's nothing in this passage about persistence. So what if there's another angle here? And I think the other angle might be this. What he's saying when he says keep on asking is this. Don't be a one and done. Don't say, oh, I prayed to God. I did the model prayer once. I did that before. You keep on asking. You keep coming back to God. You can come back every day. Keep on asking. That's why he said ask for the food you need today, because he hopes that you'll ask again tomorrow and again. Just keep it up. Keep coming back to God. Don't let prayer be something that you'd say, oh, that prayer I've prayed before. I got the t-shirt. It's in my drawer. Prayer is something that I used to do to somebody that I used to know. No, you just keep coming back to God. Ask, keep on asking. Keep on seeking. Keep on knocking. That's what relationships do. They're ongoing. And look what he says in the next verse. He says, for everyone who asks, receives. Everyone who seeks, finds. And everyone who knocks, the door will be opened. I was talking between services and Anthony said, you always wonder sometimes if we're like in a hallway with several doors knocking for God to answer, and he answers a different door. You know, and you're like, huh. I was like, why don't you answer this door? See, yeah, I answered it, just answered a different door. That goes back to the whole will of God thing. We'll discuss that some other time. But he's our answer. Then he says something very interesting, verse 9 and 10. So interesting. He says, you parents, if your children ask for a loaf of bread, do you give them a stone instead? Some of you are like, absolutely, I would do that. I'd be like, oh, you want to eat? Go chew some rocks, kid. You know, yeah. Or he says, or if they ask for a fish, do you give them a snake? Someone's like, absolutely, that's hilarious. I would totally do that. Okay, your kids are going to need therapy someday, first of all. I'm just going to say that. And but also, you might joke like that, but can we all agree, if our kids were hungry, remember how funny or sarcastic we might be? If our kids said, hey, I'm hungry, we're like, oh, let me feed you. If you have a need, let me meet it, right? That's what he's saying. Of course we wouldn't do that. We would meet their need. Now, why does he go here? He just like all of a sudden says, hey, you parents. Why does he do the you parents thing? It's because he's been trying to tell us that we approach God like a father. He's trying to relate to something that we understand. He says, you know how to take care of your kids, right? So in verse 11, the next verse, here's what he says. So if you sinful people, if you know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your heavenly Father give good gifts to those who ask him? Isn't that big? If you sinful people, can I be real? None of us are perfect parents. I'm pretty close. I don't understand the laughter, and that hurts me a little bit, but I'm going to just try to overlook it. I did my best. I hope I did a pretty good job as dads go. But you know what? Here's the thing about all of us as parents, the best of us. You know what we do sometimes? We overlook something. We space out. We forget. We get distracted. Sometimes we have a bad day, and the people closest to us don't see us at our best self. Or we have pride when there's a disagreement and we don't handle it as mature as we can. Sometimes if we're smart, we go back and ask for forgiveness. But we don't get it right all the time. The best of us. She says, if you sinful parents, the best of you, or even the average of us, if we know how to feed our kids, if we know how to take care of our kids, if we know that, how much more, come on, will your heavenly Father, who is much more than a father, but is our good father for our understanding's sake, how much more will he give us those good gifts when we come to him? Now, does that mean we get everything we want to know? And that sermon's a different day. Why and what that looks like and what should we do about it? But for today, he says, just come to him. You know what Jesus is saying to you? Come to God. And look at that word father again, father. Because again, God is like a parent, a father who just wants time with you. And here we are worrying about, I don't know what to say to him. He's like, he just wants to talk. And we're like, yeah, but am I doing it right? That's what we sometimes wonder. Am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong? And he's like, he just wants to spend time with you. And we worry sometimes about, I heard someone pray, I want to sound more like that, or I think that I hear their stories and maybe they're exaggerated for all I know, but I want to be more like that. And God's just saying, I love you. I made you. I want a personal relationship. I don't want you to bring me someone else's stuff, recycle their material. I want to be with you. Just come hang with me. Because here's the thing. Here's the truth that Jesus is teaching. It's so big. He's teaching us that there is no wrong way to hang out with dad. If dad's a healthy dad. He just wants to hang out. We can watch something. We can talk about something. We can fix something. We can just do something. We can go somewhere. I want to hear about your day. I want to tell you about my day. I want to hear what's going on, what you need. Here's what I do. Can I help you? I just want to be a part. Jesus has been saying over and over again, just come on. And don't stop. Don't do it once and just keep coming back. There's no wrong way to hang out with dad. So what do I want you to do today as we wrap this up? I want you to go home and I want you to carve out 3 hours of every day of your life from now on for prayer. 3 hours from, you say, Arlen, I don't know if I could do that. That's not what I want you to do. I want to encourage everyone here to simply take 5. To take 5 minutes. To take 5 minutes every day to pray. Now, I know some religious person who's deeply interested, like, Reverend Walters, that's all they'll say it to, Reverend Walters, I can't believe that you would simply consign prayer to a mere 5 minutes. What about that old hymn we learned, Sweet Hour of Prayer? Let me tell you something. I have enjoyed a lot of sweet hours of prayer through my life. And maybe many of you have too. But a lot of us, they're not that consistent. And whether we've gotten away from it, in fact, whether we've never gotten into praying regularly or we've gotten away from it, I almost want to get you back into the habit. Take five. Because otherwise it might be daunting. Now, I'm not just talking to the newbies. I've been around church long enough to know this. There's a lot of old-time Christians they live off their greatest hits album. Oh, yeah, I know all about prayer. And you're like, okay. But really, if they're telling the truth, it's been a while. And wildly inconsistent. Take 5 minutes a day. Here's the deal. It's like trying to get into shape. So this is January, so everyone's trying to get New Year's resolutions, possibly still. Maybe not everybody. I know that we go to the gym, and I noticed that when January rolled around, the gym got a little fuller, you know. And I'm like, okay, it'll die down by February. Because here's why. A lot of times people are like, we're gonna get to it, and what they do is they charge in, and they're gonna go there and they break their backs, and then about 2 weeks later, they're either, I can't keep that up, or they're too worn down, and it stops. I heard a really wise person who was helping coach people years ago say this great idea. He says, here's what I want you to do. If you want to exercise and work out more, drive to the gym every day and walk in for 5 minutes. That's what he said. Walk in for 5 minutes and do one device, one machine, whatever, and go home. And you're like, why would I? That's so piddly. It wasn't even worth it. He said, because the problem some of us have is I don't know what to do for a whole hour. Or I'll wore myself down. I don't have the time. He says, just go in. For a couple of reasons. One is going in every day to do something is actually better for you than going in once every blue moon to do something huge and then stopping. That's the first thing. Consistency is bigger. Second of all, if we just go in and do one thing, we'll usually end up doing two or three. So but if you don't, who cares? It's a win just to go. Take five. So here's the thing. Prayer's the same way. Yes, the sweet hour of prayer is wonderful, but here's the thing. How often does it happen? And what happens in the other times? Can you take five every day? So what do I say in 5 minutes to God? There's a lot of things you can say. How about the model prayer? Father, thank you I can come to you. May your name be kept holy. You are vast and you're amazing. But you're also like a dad who I can approach and you care. Thank you. And may your kingdom come. May your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Would you give me what I need today? Would you provide what I need for today? I'll talk to you about tomorrow, but would you provide what I need for today? Here's what's going to happen today. Here's what's going on in my life. Could you provide for me today? And by the way, would you forgive me when I've misstepped? Would you help me? Would you guide me so I don't mess it up? Just guide me. And would you protect me from all the things that could harm me and mine? That'd take 5 minutes if you do it right. Or just pray for some people. God, bless my spouse, bless my kids, bless my parents, bless my family, my friends, bless my sick loved one. Five. So to help you remember to do that, we're going to do something special today as you leave. We have for everybody here on the way out the door, we are going to give every single person here a Take Five candy bar as you leave. And this candy bar is for you to take home with you. Now, it's called a Take Five, but I don't want you to take five of them, okay? Take one of the Take Fives with you. And this is a visual reminder for you to remember this sermon, to Take Five. Now, here's why I'm doing this. Because 15 years ago, when I was a younger pastor than I am now, I don't want to reflect on my age, but when I was a little younger, I once preached a sermon about prayer, and I said the same thing, and I brought Take Five candy bars that day, and I passed them out. And there was a young man in our church who was a young married man with little kids who was in the church that day, and he took one of the candy bars and he brought it home and he put it into a dresser drawer that he opens every day of his life. Now, I don't know if he ate the candy bar first and put the wrapper there. I don't know. I forgot to ask that part. But he told me, this is years later, several years later, he says to me, Arlen, I want to thank you. I put that candy bar wrapper in a drawer I open every day of my life. And every day when I open that drawer, I'd see that Take Five, and it remind me of your sermon, and it remind me to stop and talk to God for a bit. And he says, it helped me get into a prayer rhythm, and it has enhanced my faith journey so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So I said, I got to do that again someday. So we're going to do it. But here's the thing. The candy bar is different. It used to be red. Remember the old Take Five candy bars were red? Then Reese's bought them, and now they're orange. And also, this is called a fun size. which is the stupidest name in the world, because I think a king size is more fun than this. But we got these. So anyhow, I want you to take one of these home with you and remember, eat the chocolate, but remember to take 5 minutes a day. You say, well, Arlen, can we do more than five? What if I'm doing more? If you're doing more than five every day, great. I'm not trying to talk you to pray less. You know that. I think you know that. But I'm saying I want us to pray consistently. And here's the beautiful little secret. If you'll start taking five every day, you don't know what will happen. One of these days, you might actually stop and you might actually go a little longer. You might take 6-7 minutes in prayer. I don't know. You might actually end up, I don't know, you might actually end up taking 10 minutes. And for all we know, before long, you start praying 15 minutes. And then you're like, if I'm praying 15 minutes every day, that's a good life right there. That's better than showing up for an hour once every blue moon. That's more consistent. So just, here's where to start, or if you got away from it, to restart. Let's take five. Because there's no wrong way to hang out with Dad. Here's what I want you to understand, but anything else. God is not unapproachable. He loves you. He made you. He just wants to be with you. Let's give him a little time every day. Keep on asking. Keep on seeking. Keep on knocking.